Good morning. Welcome. This is the Hoosier Ag Today Wednesday podcast on the 13th of November, 2024. I'm Andy Eubank, joined by Eric Pfeiffer, CJ Miller, and Sabrina Halverson with the news. They have a preview of the new Indiana Ag Policy podcast from HAT, focused on what Republican control in Washington means for agriculture and challenges in the wine industry due to possible tariffs. The HAT podcast is made possible by First Farmers Bank and Trust, experience banking built on heart, grit, and agriculture. More is at ffbt.com. Also today, Ryan Martin looks for mild and sunshine, but some rain is coming. And yesterday, another sell-off in corn, beans, and wheat. Arlen Suderman has market analysis on the Hoosier Ag Today Wednesday podcast.
At First Farmers, we know that farming takes grit. From unpredictable weather to market fluctuations, our farmers face challenges. Since 1885, we've watched them weather those challenges without fail. That's why we're proud to help power farmers with financial products, services, and expertise built around the seasonal nature of agriculture that lets them continue powering our local communities. Is it time to expand your operation? Visit us at ffbt.com or stop by a local branch to get started. First Farmers Bank and Trust, Equal Opportunity Lender, member FDIC.
The implications of a Republican-led White House and Congress for agriculture and the U.S. wine industry facing challenges from tariffs. I'm CJ Miller on the road in Kansas City, broadcasting from the NAFB convention, and this is Hoosier Ag Today. Republicans will be in charge of the White House and the U.S. Senate, and we're still waiting for sure, but it looks like the GOP may also win the House as well. Eric Pfeiffer discussed the impact that has on agriculture with some special guests on the latest episode of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, including a Benton County native who once served as a former USDA deputy secretary.
If the House should fall to the Republicans as well, Chuck Connor, president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, says that the implications would be dramatic.
Extending our current tax policy, which is pretty favorable policy, both for estates, for farms, for LLCs, corporations, pretty favorable. With Trump and now control of the House and the Senate being in Republicans, it's almost certain that those tax provisions that all expire next year are going to get extended. And I think generally most people would say that's pretty good news, you know, for American agriculture and for agribusiness.
Connor believes a major win for farmers under Republican leadership relates to regulatory issues.
My phone rings off the hook every day from people complaining about, you know, regulatory overreach, whether that's Environmental Protection Agency, you know, Department of Labor. It's just, you know, seems like there's a constant onslaught. I think you can safely say that when Trump takes office, regulatory overreach is going to stop, period.
One area of great concern that might be more difficult to tackle is farm labor.
We've been working on that for a very, very long time, unsuccessfully. I think our chances of solving some of those labor problems in a Republican-controlled body gets a little bit more challenging.
Hear more from Benton County native Chuck Connor on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. And congratulations to Chuck on his retirement. He just announced he'll be retiring from the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, effective at the end of the year. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, no matter if you're a fan of red wine, white wine, or both, your favorite wines could be impacted by international tariffs. Sabrina Halverson explains.
The U.S. wine industry is facing significant challenges due to tariffs on European wines, originally imposed in 2019 under the Trump administration as part of a trade dispute over Airbus subsidies. These tariffs introduced a 25% duty on many European wines, creating financial strain for American distributors who rely on these products for their beverage programs. This in turn affects restaurants, wine shops, and consumers. Ben Aniff, president of the U.S. Wine Trade Alliance, explained that the tariffs are particularly disruptive because wines are not easily replaceable.
Most of these, by the way, are not fungible. You can't really switch them out. If you're an Italian restaurant, you depend on Italian wine. If you're a French restaurant, you depend on French wine. Moreover, consumers as a whole, we've found, don't really consider most wines to be tradable.
Domestic wineries, he said, are also impacted, as they rely on the same distributors to reach markets across the country. When tariffs hit these distributors, they reduce access to markets for small American producers, disrupting the industry's interconnected ecosystem. As prices rise, consumers may face fewer choices, affecting not only the diversity of wines available, but also the economic health of local businesses. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
And I'm CJ Miller, broadcasting from Kansas City on the road at the NAFB convention for Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
Let's face it, operating a farm isn't going to get any less expensive this year. That's why an operating loan from Farm Credit Mid-America is built to give you more cash back and more flexibility in how you are able to manage your funds. Learn more at fcma.com/operating and get an operating loan that pays you back. Loan subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply. Farm Credit Mid-America is an equal opportunity lender.
I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast. We're looking at a mild day today ahead of our next frontal boundary that's coming in. This front looks like it wants to come in two pieces. We've got a southern piece that's already moving through the mid and lower Mississippi River Valley. And that's going to be the piece that gets into southern Indiana first. Then you've got the northern piece that's lagging a little bit. The low still tracking through Iowa as we move through this afternoon. And so that's going to be hitting the rest of the state overnight. So moisture can start in southwest Indiana near sunset. Clouds increasing a little bit ahead of that. Everybody else stays partly sunny through the day today. And rain showers continue to spread across the state overnight tonight through probably tomorrow morning to early midday. I'm going to pencil in anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch with coverage at 90% of the Hoosier state. The upper end of the range is going to be in southern Indiana, maybe even a few places exceeding that, getting close to an inch. We'll see how thunderstorms come together. But central and northern Indiana should stay half an inch or less. We see clouds linger tomorrow. It's not going to be a quick breakup of clouds, but I don't think it creates any more precipitation through the balance of your Thursday. And then Friday turns out partly to mostly sunny, dry, and mild. We don't see temperatures fall off behind the system very much at all. We are partly sunny for Saturday. Sunday, we see a few more clouds around. I won't rule out a spit or a sprinkle, mostly due to some cold air trying to come down over Michigan. Don't think it makes a big deal for us, but keep an eye out. Then we are dry next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Have a massive weather system starting next week in the Four Corners region and then moving out into the Great Plains, but it has a trajectory more north than east, and so it puts down good moisture in the Central Plains, Central to Western Corn Belt, and then wraps around through the Northern Plains. I bring this up because I think this system is going to be tracking eastward a little faster, so it's probably going to bring some rain in here by Thursday of next week, if not trying to bump it up even into Wednesday. I just don't think it sits and stalls in the Great Plains, but we'll see. And the other thing it does, it creates some moisture, yes, but it is wrapping down some significant cold airflow. Cold air advection out of Canada coming down through the entirety of the Rockies, the Great Plains, all the way down into North Texas. This is an interesting pull on cold air. So if it does move eastward, get ready for a big temperature pullback potentially the weekend ahead of the week of Thanksgiving. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. I'm going to see how it wants to come together, but that's what I'm paying attention to this morning. Big system could change our pattern a little bit the second half of next week. That's the way your forecast is stacking up. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Corn, beans, and wheat all lower. This is Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Andy Eubank with the Tuesday Farm Market Review. We'll review the final numbers at the end of trade and also what led to those numbers. We begin with that analysis, courtesy of Arlen Suderman, StoneX. I spoke with him at the end of trade. Arlen, day two of a sell-off, corn, soybeans, and wheat. It seems as though corn is simply being dragged lower by real weakness in beans and wheat. So let's start with the soybean market, which also saw lower soy oil. What other factors were important to push the bean market down?
I think there are several factors at work in the soybean complex. You mentioned soy oil, and it was certainly under pressure. We saw soy oil prices going higher over in recent weeks because of strength in palm oil on expectations that Indonesia would be ramping up its blending requirements for biodiesel. Looks like it may slow the pace at which it does so now. And so palm oil prices are pulling back today, creating some headwinds for soy oil. We also saw news that President Trump was going to be assigning Lee Zeldin to the EPA to be the secretary of the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. And Zeldin does not have a good track record for supporting liquid biofuels. I think that was an additional negative. In fact, it's been some years now, but in the past decade, he had worked actually to try to roll back some of the renewable fuel programs overall. So those factors certainly played against soy oil. You add to that the good rains and the very favorable crop prospects for soybeans in Brazil, where they'll be harvesting in the next 60 days or so. The fact that we failed twice at an attempt to sustain a rally above the 100-day moving average on the January contract, a lot of factors going against soybeans today.
And likewise, good weather conditions for winter wheat, both here and abroad. Is that what's putting the pressure on the wheat market?
That's a big factor for winter wheat. You add to that the fact that Russia's offering cash wheat at a lower price than what they'd indicated was going to be their minimum. And Russia does set the world cash wheat market. So that was a negative. And we're removing some war risk premium as well, with the expectation in the marketplace that Trump will bring an end to the Ukraine war. And so therefore, we will see an increase in the flow of wheat from that region. Although I think as we get into the last half of the marketing year, Russia's going to be faced with the decision to restrict exports because of a lack of supplies.
With that weakness in both soybeans and wheat, it appeared corn could do nothing but get pulled just a little lower. Is that correct?
That's certainly correct. We do have some significant resistance at around the 435 area for the December contract. We failed to push through that, so that's a chart factor. But I think if we'd had more strength in soybeans and wheat, we might have been able to do that. Failure to do so means that we pulled back from that level of resistance.
Corn and soybean export inspections out Tuesday morning, a day delayed because of Veterans Day. What were the numbers, Arlen, and how do you characterize those? Good?
They were generally good for soybeans and corn. If we look at soybeans, 83.7 million bushels, corn, 31.2 million bushels, throw in 12.8 million wheat and 6.6 million grain sorghum. And it looks like a decent week overall. We're exceeding the seasonal pace now needed to hit USDA's target for both corn and soybeans, for corn by about 26 million bushels and for soybeans by 56 million bushels, which is a bit surprising considering the strength of Brazilian production coming down the line.
Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX and StoneX.com. Now, Tuesday settlements, December corn, a penny and a half lower, 428 and a half. March and May both dip 2.5 cents, 440 and a quarter at the end for March. May finishes at 447 and a quarter. January beans, 11 and three quarters lower, down to 1010 and a half. March, 1022 and a half, a loss of 12 and three quarters. And December wheat led lower, 552 and a quarter, 13 and a quarter down. Meats higher, though. December live cattle, 184.40, up 70 cents. December lean hogs, up 57, 82.35. I'm Ian DeEubank with the Tuesday Review. This is Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's most listened to farm network.